opera Auditions of the Air, presented for your enjoyment each week by the Sherwin-Williams Company and its dealers from coast to coast, whose paint and varnish products cover the earth. Today we come to the fourth of our audition programs featuring the out-of-town winners selected by Maestro Wilfred Pelletier on his tour for talent last summer. Cincinnati, Ohio is the favorite city this afternoon. Cincinnati, famous for its familiarly called Zoo Opera Company, of which so many Sherwin-Williams Metropolitan Audition winners have been members, Mona Pauly, Raoul Jobin, Arthur Caron, and Leonard Warren, to name a few. Cincinnati, the city which boasts one of the finest music schools in the country, the well-known Cincinnati Conservatory. With the aid of the staff of radio station WSAI, Maestro Pelletier heard approximately 100 young singers last August. He selected to be brought to New York two young ladies whose talent and ability seemed outstanding to sing on the air for you and for the judges. Mr. Edward Johnson, General Manager of the Metropolitan Opera Association and Chairman of our Committee of Judges, is here to introduce them. And later in the program, Mayor James Stewart of Cincinnati will greet us. But first, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Cross, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. There's no fixed rule which tells us where talent may be found. And among our great American artists at the Metropolitan, no two come from the same place. In the past, we have spent years combing Europe for fine voices, and we have sometimes ignored the possibilities of our own tremendous continent. We are still new at the job of developing and growing our own artists, but we're learning every day, and with magnificent results. Maestro Pelletier's trip last summer brought us 10 fine young singers to the Sherwin-Williams Metropolitan Audition Program. You have already heard 8 of them, and here are the last 2. It is a great pleasure for me to introduce Miss Charlotte Howard, soprano, Miss Lucille Norman, and mezzo-soprano, both of Cincinnati, Ohio.
First to audition for us this afternoon is Miss Lucille Norman. Miss Norman's mother and father both were singers, so it was only natural that by the time she was 12, little Lucille was singing her heart out in school operetta performances. At 16, she made her professional debut with the Colorado Symphony Orchestra. The success of that appearance led to many radio jobs in Denver and later in Cincinnati. She won a scholarship to the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, and since then has sung both oratorio and concerts in and around that city. Miss Norman has chosen for her audition this afternoon an aria from Gluck's opera Orfeo. Orfeo, having braved the fires of Hades to bring his beloved Eurydice back to earth, disobeys the warning of the goddess of love and looks at his beautiful wife. As she falls lifeless in his arms, he sings the noble Che farò senza Eurydice. I have lost my Eurydice.
Thank you.
Charlotte Howard, our next auditionist, was born in a mining camp in Kentucky. Her father was a physician, her mother an educator. When Charlotte was 14, she won the singers' division of the Kentucky State Music Festival as a mezzo-soprano. By the time she had graduated from the Ohio Wesleyan University at the tender age of 18, she had become a lyric soprano. She won a scholarship at the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music and continued there until she received her Bachelor of Music degree. Since then, she has appeared on radio, in concerts throughout the Middle West, and with the Cincinnati Zoo Opera Company. Unfortunately, she has been suffering from a severe cold, but true to the tradition of the theater, she's going to sing so that the show may go on. Miss Howard has chosen an aria from the third act of Jules Massenet's opera, Lucie. De Gorma, father of the lovely Chimène, is killed in a duel of honor. Chimène, heartbroken, demands the name of the murderer. She is horrified to learn he is Rodrigo, her betrothed. Sitting alone in her room at night, she despairingly sings the tragic Fleurs de Jeu. In these times when every one of us is doing his bit to help defend our country, Sherwin-Williams is proud of the part its paints and varnishes are playing in national defense. For Sherwin-Williams paints give more than beauty. They give long-lasting protection against the corrosive action of wind and weather. Yes, paint protects America, saving our nation millions of dollars annually by preserving the surfaces it covers. And today, when preserving the things you own is so important, it is more worth your while than ever to know your Sherwin-Williams dealer and all the ways in which he can help you. If you are looking for home color styling ideas, you are welcome at any time to come into his shop and look through the famous Sherwin-Williams paint and color style guide. Those huge volumes are packed with beautiful color photographs of actual homes and actual rooms.
We interrupt our programs now and take you to the NBC newsroom.
A Japanese flash. Imperial headquarters announced a state of war with the United States. We'll repeat that again. A Japanese flash. Imperial headquarters announces state of war with the United States. We take you now to San Francisco.
In San Francisco, we present Upton Close.
Hello, Americans. We've just had a flash in Tokyo saying that a state of war exists with the United States. Now we begin to see through things. It's obvious that the Imperial General Staff in Tokyo took affairs right out of the hands of the civil government and has precipitated an attack and now announces that that attack is war. There is further evidence that the civil government in Tokyo knew nothing about it. Our Hollywood listening post has been listening carefully to everything coming over. Nothing has been picked up that indicated that the official radio in Japan, which is under the control of the Foreign Office, knew anything about what was happening. We now all look forward to the speech that's announced by Premier Dictator Tojo, another one by Minister Togo, and a third one by Naval Chief Shimada. Said these speeches will begin about 4:30 p.m. Pacific Coast time, be about 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. These speeches will be made before a fanatical military association called the Imperial Rule Assistance Association in Tokyo, an inside group of gangsters who have precipitated their government into war with the United States. Thank you.
NBC takes you now to Manila. Ladies and gentlemen, back in San Francisco with Upton Close.
We've been trying to contact Manila. We heard a little Spanish, which was speaking about the attack on Honolulu. From that, we might assume that no serious attack has happened in Manila. But we don't know yet. And we can't get Manila right now, so I'm going to talk to you a few more minutes. We're very interested in whether or not the attack on Honolulu would be called, from a military standpoint, a real serious attack. So far, 5 civilians killed in the bombing of the city is certainly not what they would call a serious attack in London. We have, at present, 2 conflicting, possibly conflicting reports about the damage done in a military sense. There seems to be no doubt but that the airfield, Hickman Field, was hit, and damage done which was not serious from the standpoint of flying, but a tragedy in the shape of a direct hit on an American barracks, which it is said killed 350 American soldier boys on the field. That's the worst thing yet. There seems some uncertainty whether any real damage was done at the naval base We have a report saying that the USS Oklahoma, a battleship, one of our first class, but not one of our newest, was set afire in the air attack. Doesn't say whether it was seriously afire or not. There's another report unconfirmed that two U.S. warships, one of them the West Virginia, were sunk. I would take that just as a rumor until we have further confirmation. Now, as I have said before, the whole thing is going to come clear after we get these speeches from the Premier of Japan. It's rather interesting to note the possibilities of the way in which the attack took place. There's one rumor that the attack took place from the south. That would be in the direction of the island of Maui. It might be that a Japanese airplane was hiding out around the little island of Maui or below Molokai. It might even have been in connection with something going on at the island on the island of Hawaii, the biggest island of the chain and the southernmost one. There's a port there called Hilo, where there are Japanese in dominance. We have just had a flash saying that Japan has also entered a state of war with Britain.
Thank you, Mr. Coast. Manila is ready now, so we take you to Manila.
Well, that bombing occurred. It was in the middle of night.
In Manila.
Word of the attack was officially flanked to General Douglas MacArthur, commanding the U.S. Armed Forces of the Far East.
General MacArthur immediately issued an alert command to his entire force, including the Air Corps, which sprang into action. The Navy got word through its own sources. From Admiral Hart's headquarters came word that hostilities had opened with the bombing of Pearl Harbor. It was announced that steps are being taken accordingly. That is Navy language. Censorship is to be established. We don't know just when it will be full censorship. The telephone circuit has been discontinued for general use, and it is no longer possible to send code messages to the United States. Plain English is permitted for the time being. Can American Airways here says there is no clipper at present in Orion. There is a ship at Wake Island headed for the Orient. It was to have arrived here on Wednesday. This position of the clipper service remains undetermined for the present. The news first word of the Honolulu attack came through efforts to check on a report that Manila itself had been bombed. This report apparently emanated from London. On the contrary, Manila is still quiet and peaceful. Or was until the news got around about the Japanese attack on Honolulu. Details about what happened in Honolulu are lacking here. Press reports indicate that 50 or more planes participated in a general attack on Pearl Harbor. Naval authorities here agree privately that they could only avoid such an attack from a carrier, although it is learned from the non-naval sources that the Japanese had an air base of considerable size about 1,000 miles south of Wake Island. This would not have been within round-trip bombing distance of Hawaii, however. I have just received word that the Air Force of the U.S. Army of the Far East is taken to the air on patrol here. They can be heard overhead now. Let me assure you once more that Manila has not been bombed. General MacArthur, seeking to quiet the people when this report got around, put out a comforting statement. He appealed to the Filipino populace for self-control. Obviously, he was seeking to prevent a general rush to the open country over narrow highways and roads needed for self-defense. The general said his own feeling was one of security and confidence. This is Ford Wilkins in Manila, returning you now to CBS in New York.
H.B. Carlton Bourne speaking from the NBC newsroom. We've just had word from Shanghai that a British gunboat in the harbor of Shanghai has been sunk by the Japanese. The importance of this is that it indicates that war is declared not only against the United States, but also against Britain. However, it is possible that the Japanese were aiming at the United States gunboat Wake, which was close to the British ship. But it happened that the Wake was not damaged, and the British gunboat was. However, you and I know that Britain, in response to Prime Minister Churchill's pledge, would be in the war in any case. Because, as the news that has just come from Tokyo indicates, Japan has declared officially that there is a formal state of war between Japan and the United States. A state of war that has been brought about by Japanese action in attacking Hawaii. We have just had word from Manila that there has been no bombing attack on Manila. The original White House announcement to the effect that Manila had been attacked was evidently a mistake. One of those mistakes that are very apt to happen in the excitement of such events as have taken place this afternoon. It's evident now that there has been serious damage in Honolulu and Pearl Harbor. It's evident that if the evidence that we have had from our correspondent in Honolulu, that 350 men were killed in a direct hit on barracks at Hickam Field in Pearl Harbor, if that is true, it does indicate that the attack was a complete surprise, for it is not customary to keep men in barracks subject to air attack at a time when any such attack is either anticipated or when it is underway. It is evident now that the world entirely is at war, for this action by Japan extends the war all over Asia and, of course, to the American continent and doubtless also to many other countries of the Western Hemisphere. For there is no question but what a great many, certainly most of the Latin American countries, will stand side by side with the United States against this attack on the part of Japan. British reaction is already expressed in an editorial in Lord Beaverbrook's newspaper. He says this: the bluff is over. The war that Japan meant in all these years and in all her dealings with Britain and America is open war at last. There is unity here in the United States. In all the voices to which I've listened to this afternoon, voices of national leaders, of senators, of representatives, there was not one discordant note. Senator Wira, the leading isolationist, when informed today that Japan had attacked the United States, simply replied, "That means war, and we'll have to see it through." So it is evident that so far as the United States is concerned, there is now complete unity with reference to whatever action the President in his message to Congress tomorrow will ask this country to take. China is already at war with Japan, and her great manpower will be an enormous asset. The Dutch, with their fleet and with their excellent air force down in the South Pacific, may be expected to be of great help. The one question is Russia. What will Russia do if Japan does not attack her? That remains to be seen. This, after all, is an excellent opportunity to test whether or not Soviet Russia is sincere in her professions of friendship for the United States. For, doubtless, she could be of enormous assistance if she were to turn over to us her bases on the Kamchatka Peninsula, if she were to permit us to use Vladivostok, if she were to use her great army in the Far East to strike into Manchuria and thereby divert a good part of Japan's military power. Obviously, Russia will wait, but it is quite possible that if Japan does not attack her, that she will decide to place herself at the side of the United States and use those forces in the Far East that have so far played no part in the war. Good afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to H.V. Kaltenborn, noted NBC commentator and news analyst. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The National Broadcasting Company wishes to thank the Sherwin-Williams Company, sponsors of the Metropolitan Auditions of the Air, for relinquishing a portion of their time to bring you the special broadcast just heard. The Metropolitan Auditions of the Air will be heard again next Sunday afternoon at this same time. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York. Mm-hmm.